Okay, good afternoon. So what I'm going to talk to you about this afternoon is looking at geographical disparities in access to health care by cardiovascular disease and cancer patients in Mississippi. And I have no disclosures. So the purpose and objective of this presentation is that in this era of reform in the U.S. in terms of health care reform, it's also particularly important that we understand all the factors that sort of impact access to care. I think the focus has always been on insurance, and people study insurance and do not look at some other factors. But one invisible barrier that is a focus in terms of this research is to look at trained practitioners in terms of patients' access, in terms of the services that they deliver. And I focus on two particular healthcare providers, which is cardiologists and oncologists in the state of Mississippi, because the number one killer and number two killers in Mississippi are cardiovascular disease and cancer. In fact, for every 100 individuals who die, 42 of them die of some cardiovascular-related death, and 23 of the 100 die of some form of cancer. So we wanted to examine the disparities in cardiovascular and cancer mortality and the distribution of physicians, cardiologists, and oncologists in Mississippi. Again, we know that, as I indicated earlier, if we look in the year 2000, of closely about 12,000 Mississippians who died from cardiovascular disease, and about 6,100 of them died from cancer. The price tag for the payments made to Medicaid beneficiaries for hospital expenses due to cardiovascular problems is somewhere in the neighborhood of about $26.4 billion, and that the average cost per discharge is almost close to $8,000. In 2000, NIH estimated that the cost of cancer was about $182.2 billion. Insurance status and barriers to health care may contribute to the economic burden of CVD and cancer in the U.S. Availability and access to trained practitioners by patients is one barrier to health care that has received little or no attention. And that's what I want to bring your attention to. So looking at some of the summary statistics, just to sort of give you the bottom line to all of this, approximately or greater than 40% of deaths, which is approximately 2.4 million Americans each year, die of cardiovascular disease, is the national leading cause of disability. And we estimate about one coronary event for every 30 seconds, which translates to about one death per minute. In cancer, one out of every four deaths is due to some form of cancer, and about 1.2 million new cases were diagnosed in 2002, and approximately 1,500 people die per day, and these are a little old statistics. But in order to bring the point home, I used several different data sources. I used the U.S. Census, the American Heart Association statistics, American Cancer Society statistics, the National Cancer Institute, and the American Board of Medical Specialists Directory, a board-certified medical specialist. We also looked at physician characteristics and distribution in the U.S., and the also used some data source from Mississippi Department of Health. Generally, this is use some descriptive statistics, correlation analysis, Kruskal-Wallis test, instead of the analysis of variance, because normality did not prevail in this case, so we needed to use the Kruskal-Wallis test. Rates were computed per 100,000 persons. So if we look at this, and I'll give you some more pictorial in terms of putting all this in context of geography, we realized that about 74% of this 82 counties in Mississippi have no cardiologists. About close to 78.1% do not have a medical oncologist. When you get down to about one or two, there's still less than 10%, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 7-8% have. But then there are a few places like in Hinds County around the Jackson, the capital city, the capital of Mississippi, the city of Jackson, in Hinds County, where you have almost about 30-something cardiologists and oncologists all clustered. But it's not surprising because Jackson, Mississippi, as I term it, is like the medical mecca of Mississippi. You have the only medical training, medical center in the state located in Jackson. You have Baptist Hospital, a very comprehensive cancer center. You have St. Dominic, highly specialized in cancer and cardiovascular. So most of the specialists are based in that Evans Center. So visually, if we look at just the different grades of rates of cardiovascular mortality, and we look at it, the dots are basically open white dots of the cardiologists, and the size of the dot shows you the density of the physicians. But you realize that in a lot of the states, and the focus I want to put is somewhere around this region, which is more of the Delta area, where you have most of your problem is where you have fewer practitioners. The picture is not very different when you look at it in terms of cancer. It's still the same. Where you have the problem, you don't have the expertise. So what generally is happening is that people at one time, people will give the joke that, you know, at one point you go to the Mississippi Medical Center Hospital to die. But it's because most people, by the time they get there, they're very sick. Because by the time they travel all the way from that point to this area where Jackson, the city of Jackson is, they'll have to be really sick or really need some urgent care. So, again, we're trying to, and this is just breaking it down by the regions, the Delta region, what we call the hills, the heartland, Hinds County, Madison, and Rankin County, which makes up the metropolitan Jackson area, is pretty much all in the heartland. You also have some concentration of physician in the Gulf Coast area, which is Biloxi, Gulfport, and that's where you have also a big military base. You have a VA hospital right down there. And up north, up in the hills, you have close to Memphis, so sometimes people get care also from Memphis. But you have Lee County, where Tupelo is, and you have quite an established medical facility there. But again, this showing that what the problem is you have fewer of the experts who could address the situation. And the picture is very similar for cancer. So the very point I wanted to make with this presentation is that though the Delta region has the highest CVD and cancer mortality, has the lowest percentage of board-certified cardiologists and oncologists, the Heartland has the highest percentage of cardiologists and oncologists, primarily because of the density of these specialists in the Tri-County area, which is Hinds, Madison, and Rankin counties. Percentage of poverty is a significant predictor of this disparity. So in the regions where you have more disease, more mortality, fewer of these experts, you also find that those are the more poorer areas and also tend to be more rural. Mississippi as a whole is considered a rural state, but most of the rural areas will be like in the Delta region and the places where you have more problems. We also found out that the number of primary care providers is positively correlated with the board-certified cardiologists and oncologists. So again, where you have fewer of these trained experts, you also have fewer trained primary care givers. So it's not like you know, if it was negatively correlated, you could say that those individuals could intervene and therefore there would be some buffer, but where you have fewer of these specialists, you also have fewer primary care individuals. So we realized that disparity do exist in the distribution of these two specialists that we focused on, But in this current age and time, and as an industrialized nation, I think, and looking at the whole information technology system, I don't think we should have this kind of disparity. But I think most of the times our focus has been on insurance, and giving everybody access to insurance. But I don't think that is the solution, because you can have the insurance, but if you don't have the services, you still can't access and get the services that you need. So maybe instead of focusing solely on insurance and making sure that everybody has insurance, maybe we need to focus on having maybe more access. Maybe putting small community clinics where in small communities where people can, their immediate needs can be addressed, and we can move more to a prevention model, because we realize that the system doesn't support comprehensive care, and there's really not equity in terms of the care delivery system. And as I was thinking about this, there is a police chief in New Orleans who made a name for himself after he left Washington, D.C. and went to New Orleans. His name was Chief Pennington. He actually ran for mayor and didn't win. But one of the things he did and made his name in New Orleans was that most of the crime problems were in the housing projects. So he started putting precincts, small precincts, in the housing projects, and the problems went away. So maybe sometimes all we need to do is put infrastructure and where the problem is and begin to address it at the root cause and not wait or have, you know, the services in much more distant area. So I think we need to really look at use of information technology and infrastructure such as telemedicine. We also need maybe strategically placed comprehensive health centers. Mississippi has quite a bit, I think a total of about 22 or 23 community health centers. So looking at where they're placed strategically may be important, as opposed to maybe a politician trying to put one in his district or something so that he can get reelected. Maybe we need to look at what the problem is. Maybe use GIS to find out what's the most vantage point to put these comprehensive health clinics. Also, teaching hospitals should develop satellite campuses in areas of greater need. I used to jokingly say that at one time you could leave Jackson, take Southwest, and go to Baltimore and come back the next day on the late, you know, early flight, late flight, and be back, and you wouldn't miss like you went anyway. So I think we should be able to have, you know, special clinics where we know these cardiologists are not going to live in those communities because they worry about their kids' school and the socioeconomic infrastructure. But at least have clinics where they can maybe go a day or two and host these clinics in those facilities to be able to bring care to these individuals. So that answered my presentation. I had 15 minutes, so I wanted to keep it short, sweet, and crisp.
Thank you, guys. You did a great job as a group. I wasn't pulling anyone down. I'd actually like to bring the four of you back up here so we can kind of see you when we're asking the questions. And maybe I'll throw it as they're coming up. Maybe I'll throw it out to the rest of us. Let's just do a quick show of hands. You can have your hand up for more than one. Raise your hand if you consider yourself a clinician in this room. You see patients. I'll keep my hand up. So I am trying. I came up with a bunch in the other two categories, but I don't know if I have any pearls yet that I could add to the conversation. Clinical, except the presentation about breast cancer, does that question is going to kind of trouble me. What's going on there that I as a clinician could influence in terms of how the maybe getting lost in there. Raise your hand if you consider yourself a researcher. Researcher. Okay. So I'm remembering whose hand went up. Raise your hand if you consider yourself a policy person. Any health policy? Yeah. Okay. Couple, just before we pick on these guys, for pick their brains a little bit more, any immediate kind of research or policy ideas that putting all of this together, from China to Georgia to Mississippi, did anything completely just strike you? This is what we need to be doing more of, or we need to be looking at more of.
passionate about underserved populations. And I think the number one thing is they're kind of the forgotten people to start with. A lot of it has to do with, you know, what he was saying. It's not giving them insurance, it's giving them access or providing the, you know, the means and how to get to it. So I think he nailed it in the head when he said that. And I think that's the big thing, is just providing the access more than, I don't know, what it looks like on paper.
Right. And as I think you very well pointed out, insurance is used as, you have insurance, you know, that means you're well taken care of. And under insurance is actually something that I've looked at here recently, but it's basically the idea that there's a lot of people who are insured who, for the fact that you can be insured but be 300 miles away in Mississippi from the nearest, you know, person that you're on paper supposed to be able to see, but it's 300 miles away. So. Yeah, that's a good point. Yes?
I guess this is a pet project that I've worked on with some states. If you look at the rural counties, and you made the case with Mississippi, where if you look at them politically, they're not without clout. I don't know how it works in Mississippi, but if each county has one or two senators, state senators, then they do have some amount of clout, at least in the state senate. You know, they have no population, so in the House they have nothing, but in the Senate they do have a voice. It's kind of like low population states in this country. And if you look at low population states in the country, they actually can swing things. But what they have to do is gang up. And it's like what I see that the underserved rural areas, the age-old question is, you know what, if they got together and used their political clout, they could get one of those health centers that you were talking about. But then here's the problem, and you actually mentioned it. Okay, the three of us or four of us have gotten together here, and we're going to flex our muscle and demand a clinic. Okay. Which one of our counties gets it?
Yeah. It's not going to be all three or four of you.
Yeah, we'll get one, but...
Any other... Good. You were in here for policy, so... And that was a policy level, you know, we'd be doing things at the state houses. What were you going to say?
But also... practitioner, off and on, never could hold a job, but I've been involved with rural health for 40 years, and nothing's ever simple. The poorest county is also the least insured, with the most obesity, and the most pesticide use, and the lowest levels of physical activity. And you could go ahead with the confounding variables, but the time you've got the diagnosis and you realize you need a cardiologist or you need an oncologist, it's awfully late to fish the situation out of the fire. I have precious little faith as I say, I don't know if I got my medical degree nearly 50 years ago. I have precious little faith in ologists for reducing mortality myself. I'd make my investment for reducing mortality in community health workers rather than the oncologists myself.
That's a very good point. And As I was listening to the last presentation, as a nation, I think it's pretty clear that we have way too many specialists for what's good for the population health. So that, you know, I was trying to think about how that relates to this message. It's not that we need more cardiologists, we maybe need them more equitably distributed. Any thoughts initially from the four of you?
I think it's not... The design of the presentation was not so much to push for more a specialist, but when you have them and they're only concentrated in pockets of places, then you end up having that geographical disparity. And they're not where the problem is. So, you know, it's almost like build it, then they will come. You know, so they are in the places where they're comfortable, but not necessarily where the problem is. But they figure out the people would need service will come to them. But when they come to them, they're in bad shape. And what also it does is it increases the healthcare costs because they're intervening very late and everything is expensive at that point. And if the folks can't afford it, you just drive the healthcare bill up the roof. Whereas if they're intervening or they have some way of, I'm not advocating that these people move into the communities because that would be wishful thinking. But what I'm saying is with technology and everything, why couldn't they create the infrastructure to provide the services where it's needed? So it's more of equity in terms of distribution, not necessarily people in numbers. And it also speaks to the fact that if that paradigm doesn't change, then we need more of a preventive model than more of a treatment model, because this nation is really more based on healthcare. It's based more on a treatment model. We're looking for a silver bullet for everything. You know, so we rather not walk, but we want a pill that will help us lose weight. You know, it's, I mean, we can go on and on, but, you know.
Any specific questions?
I was caught by the chart showing the distribution of cardiologists and oncologists, where in the Jackson area, you had the long bars, and then you had like two or three of each kind of specialist scattered out about the state. What can you tell us about those practitioners? I'm particularly interested in their ages and the likelihood that they are going to be around to practice for any length of time.
Basically, the source of my data was based on the registry of the specialists. So I would have to go back and see whether that data source actually gives their age. These are people who are registered with the state in terms of, and it's a national directory that lists, you know, who they are, their city and location. I don't know if they get that level of information in terms of their age, but it would be something that I need to look at to develop this fully for a much wider dissemination. But off the top of my head, I couldn't answer the question.
Well, what I'm interested in is the need to replace these guys. And what it would take, whether it is possible to recruit those specialists to come into those particular areas, or to do some kind of geographic distribution of the facilities for getting the patients and the doctors together. If these guys are fairly young and healthy, they may be around for years, but if what you have is a very common situation in which the doctors should have retired years ago, but they don't want to abandon their patients and they go on in some kind of practicing to some degree. But they're over age in terms of sharpness on the job, for example. You don't have the data that would give any clue to whether something should be done about replacing these guys in the near future. And I think that's a serious lack of data in terms of planning what needs to be done next.
Okay, in reference to your question in Mississippi, the problem is not in Jackson. The scenario you just referred to is a problem in the rural areas, because that's the area where most of the doctors are aged and those community members so that they can get the services they need without having to travel all the way to Jackson. But it is a critical problem in that area. But I do have a question that I want to, because from these presentations, it would seem to me that the definition of rural varies from China to Minnesota to Jackson. It's not the same. So I'm wondering about when you make comparisons nationally and internationally, how best we can come to tell what really is rural. I suppose if any of you will have some ideas on how we can best define what rural really is in order to make these kinds of comparisons.
So maybe quite different. In China, I think the rural areas, many people live in rural areas. So in America, maybe a few people live in rural areas. It's quite different. Also in China, we have set up three levels health care system. The lowest level is village level. The second is township level, and the third is county level. This is for primary health care, three levels. In village level, we have clinics. Yes, every village should have at least one clinic. And every town level, every town, township, we should have a country's hospital. Not really hospital, something like also is a small hospital, also some public health they should do some public health. And third level is the county level, county maybe some different from American counties. County level we have hospital, you have different hospitals, also have CDC, have something like this. This is for countryside. Also in China, we also have district level and more high province level and more high country level. Since we said the city level is for primary health care.
You make a terribly important point. You can be talking and assuming that you know that you're agreeing about definitions, but for instance, in South Africa, rural can just mean without a formal structured communities like water and sewer. But you can have a quarter of a million people in a community without structured water and sewer, and it's still referred to as rural. So it's terribly important, as the gentleman implied, to agree on what's implied by the term.
Any thoughts, Summer?
It was a part of the point that we were trying to make is that there are a variety of different definitions, and part of it has to do with the definition. And there are the rural results, urban continuum, by looking at urban influence codes, and there's a variety of different coding strategies, most of which don't get used a lot in public health. But it goes to the heart of the matter is that, one, do we have data at those levels that are identifiable at those levels? And then if so, how do we decide what is the best way? Does it have to do with how much, access to certain specialties or even primary care providers in a particular area? Does it have to do with transportation mechanisms? The different coding systems that even exist for the U.S. Take different sorts of things into account. I think that we would be well served by particularly thinking about rural populations and coming to some sort of agreement. I was thinking about it too with your background information where you were talking about the different studies about the urban and rural mm-hmm. disadvantage in the conflicting results. And my first inclination is to think that they've defined rurality or rural or urban differently, and so that's probably playing, you know, some role in the conflicting results. But yeah, I think it's critical if we're going to continue going forward trying to understand better about the health of rural populations that we find some consensus or some consistency with definitions.
Any other questions or thoughts? I'll add that I think New Mexico, which is similar to probably the three states here and to the communities in China, we've done some, I think, potentially effective things at a policy level. We're a state where I think 30 of our 33 counties are underserved, and that's probably the same amount that are considered rural. Our center is in Jackson, Albuquerque. But one, the state legislature funded a group that basically is funded by the state legislature as a nonprofit that recruits physicians for the state. So this at a state, they didn't wait for, you know, because there isn't really the one of the problems I think all of us involved in rural health would agree. There's just the money incentives that drive so much of this treatment-based healthcare system. That's not you're not paid to prevent someone from quitting smoking. You're paid to take out the lung cancer. So the state, yeah, sorry to just put it bluntly, but that's where we're at. So the state funds a group whose job is just like a group that would be sitting there in the exhibit hall who's recruiting physicians, is paid by the state to get physicians to the places where they're not. And I think it's more obviously going to be primary care. We have counties that don't even have a primary care doc in New Mexico. So we're not even, you know, worried about ologists really just getting a doctor. We have a program that actually accepts high school students from rural New Mexico into med school as a high school senior. They have to do undergrad first, but they're accepted particularly from rural New Mexico with the idea these are the folks who are most likely to go back and serve rural New Mexico. Again, state funded, they get a free ride undergrad, a seat saved for them 4 years later. You know, those are a couple of, I'm sure every state has things like we do where I think you get $25,000 toward loan repayment if you agree to stay, I want to say 3 or 4 years in the state after you're done your formal training. And then one other thing that I'm sure also other states are doing, a lot of telemedicine from the big university seems to be going on. So not a perfect fit. I don't think anyone in this room would say your ideal healthcare situation is talking, particularly like in psychiatry where we seem to be doing the most of that. But I find that's a very difficult idea to share something or share a real health concern and the person is not physically there, they're talking to you over technology. But as you point out, we have technology as potentially a really good fit, even if it's not perfect in some situations. And I think, again, at our state policy level, there's been some big funds put into telemedicine because like some of the situations you all described, we're not going to overnight find physicians and healthcare systems and hospitals for the places of most need. So I think there are some promising things that I've seen kind of locally as a physician.
If I can just point out one of the little anticipated consequences we'll see, I think we will be seeing hospitals payments reduced on the basis of how many patients are readmitted within 30 days of discharge. And you'll see more patients readmitted in the areas of Mississippi that have more heart disease. Even if the care is just as good, the health is worse. So even with equal care but worse underlying health, more people are going to be going back into the mm-hmm. hospital. So it will be assumed that the care was worse. So those rural hospitals will be assumed, even given equal care, to be giving worse care on the basis of outcomes because the underlying health status is worse. So So no good deed.
Hospital closures potentially.
So no good deed will go unpunished in that particular situation.
I really appreciate you four for enlightening us. It was a great conversation. Thank you.